welcome to the International Writers Network. And today, on the telephone, because we are in COVID, we have Bernie Dawn. Bernie, how are you, Bernie?
I'm great, thanks, Mary, and thanks very much for having me along.
Now, Bernie, I am so happy to have you. Do you know why? I realise you're also a history teacher, and I loved history when I was at school.
Yeah.
I loved history. And
yes,
I wasn't keen on geography, but I loved the history because our teacher used to bring it alive. And I know you you are great at doing that because you've done a whole series of podcasts. But we're not going to get to that here. What we want to know, Bernie, is because you're a fabulous creative writer as well. You're many things. You wear many hats. You used to be a history teacher. You're a writer. You do podcasts. But I want to know, first of all, because this is a writing program, and many people tune in to really find out how to be a better writer, to admire those who are writing. They've got some kind of accolade, even if they've got nothing, but at least they've taken up the course of writing, especially creatively. So how did you get in to writing?
How did I get in?
How did you get into writing? Because you're a history teacher, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I know. Well, I suppose from an early age, Mary, I always liked reading. And I always like stories. I like hearing stories even more than reading them. And I suppose I was always an observer. My memory is probably too good, and I take in a lot of details. And I guess anyone who likes to write also has to pay attention to what's going on around them. So I have a lot of memories in my head, not necessarily of events, but memories of people and places and, you know, mannerisms and habits and rituals and all those kind of things, and scapes, you know, countryscapes or cityscapes, that kind of thing. And it builds up over the years. And I suppose when I wasn't what you would call a very good student in school, but I did manage to get into University College Dublin to study English literature and history. And so that was made for me. I was designed for that, and it was great. And I was really, you know, from then on, I had different careers in teaching and in freelance journalism and in technology, and then back to teaching, and eventually even doing some broadcasting like yourself in Near FM. So between times, I just would return to writing, you know? And probably in more recent years then, I moved more from journalism to creative writing. And I would have returned, I suppose, to creative writing back around 2014, yeah.
And do you find that, did your journalism help your writing, or was it that you've always created anyway? You always created something.
I don't know. I think I always liked, you know, putting words together, you know? So the journalism I suppose the thing about journalism is it can be very straight across the board, you know, very linear, or it can be very creative. So it depends what you're doing. So I suppose I did a mixture. You know, you could be writing about, you know, you could be reviewing books or something, and you could be more creative there. But I suppose in the back of my mind, I always thought that one day I would get more into creative writing. But, you know, I think it just falls on you, Mary. You know, you just get an idea one day, and that you go with that. And then you take it from there, you know? That's the way I think it works anyway.
So really, I'm just trying to get, on behalf of the listeners, I'm just trying to get a picture of your writing journey. So you had a wonderful academic in terms of literature and your degree in literature and history.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering whether you wrote any romantic history novels, you know, put all those things together.
No, I'll tell you what, you're after pressing a very sore button there, romantic history. You know, for me, you know, history is just so, so important. And my fear is that a lot of people maybe get their history from the television or from, you know, historical fiction, and that's probably not good if you're trying to understand the way the world has developed into where it is now. And it was never more important. It was never more important for people to know their history, because there's so much unrest in the world at the moment. And it's not even just political unrest or, you know, national and international, you know, wars. And it's even, you know, all parts of life, Mary, have a history. You know, medicine has a history. Fashion has a history. Science has a history. And they're all equally important.
Maybe you could just tell us, because I know you did a series of podcasts based on, you know, I don't want to say diabolical history, based on history and really correcting certain history that's been told to people. How did you find that, and how did your writing evolve in that? Because I listened to an interview you did. You said it was also very entertaining. So because I love history, I'm not going to go and listen to every single one of them.
Because
I'm a history fanatic. I am. And I said, oh my gosh, this lady wrote history. Let me find out what's going on. And so tell me, how did your writing help with the way you wrote that history to give it more entertaining so people can actually be drawn in?
I don't know that now. I mean, I suppose the reader would have to tell me that. So it was a series of essays first, and then I turned them into podcasts. And what happened was, I was working in an adult learning centre, the Dunleary Adult Learning Centre, and I was so lucky to be given, you know, to have a group of adults sign up for my English literature and history classes. And they were the best students I ever had in my entire career. They were absolutely amazing. And really, they inspired me, and we learned from each other. But the interesting thing was, when you're doing history with adults who think about things and consider things and have a life behind them, and who want to find out and understand things properly, you know, you're at a great starting point. And what happened was, we were doing the French Revolution, and so there was a nice small class, and we'd sit around the table and we'd have a chat about the topic and go through our notes. So the French Revolution is very interesting, because it was started, really, it was pushed forward by the middle class, or the bourgeoisie, as they were called. And, you know, people look at the French Revolution and they think, oh, all the poor people came out and protested and they overturned the monarchy. But it wasn't. The real people, the people who really pushed the French Revolution, were the educated middle classes. So that was okay. We tackled that, and we tried to get our heads around it and understand it. Then next up came the Russian Revolution. And again, people have this notion of the poor fighting for their rights and marching in the streets. And in both the French and Russian Revolution, that was the case. The poor people, the marginalised people, were doing that. But there was other people behind the scenes, not so much behind the scenes, but kind of pulling strings in the background. And again, they were the equivalent of the bourgeoisie. And so it was. I was thinking about that. And I said, there you are now. There's an example of someone not learning from their history. So the French Revolution happened. The King Louis and his wife, Marie Antoinette, lost their heads. And I'm thinking, well, did Tsar Nicholas II of Russia, could he not learn from that? Could he not see that a similar thing was going to happen in Russia? And of course it did. And himself and his whole family, indeed, were murdered. So learning from history, and that's where the idea, it's kind of the spark of the idea was born. So I designed this this podcast series, or this show, sorry, a show called The A to Z of Historical Blunders, Lessons, you know, We Should Have Learned from Our History. So that was actually episode B. You know, the bourgeoisie, ignore them at your peril, or something, I think they called it. Yeah. So each episode took something that happened in history and took something else that happened in history and wondered why one set didn't learn from the other. Do you understand me?
Yes, I do. I do totally. I really do. And that's wonderful to know. Do you think then that the way you were able to express this history to your adult class that you taught in your podcast was because you can express the words to give people more vivid understanding of what was going on, to capture the thing? Because sometimes, you know, history for most people can be very just dull and very boring facts and figures and doesn't make any sense. But if you have a creative teacher, this is what I'm thinking, even the characters, you can make it come alive. And that's what I remember my history teacher, she made history come alive, that we all wanted to go and major in history. And that's why I love history. So, because the history teacher has a way of bringing things alive. But I think when you're also a creative writer, this is, I'm just trying to get the writing part of that makes it possible for you to give vivid imagination through your words, to make people, to bring people into that history time, that historical time, and let them see so they can think. Because the whole purpose of education is that you're able to think for yourself at the end and have a critical understanding of what's happening. But if you don't have someone that could deliver that, then you just come out the way you left. That's why our teaching adult is actually a lot better, because with the children, they're used to you're just giving them information. Okay, we've got to pass an exam and that's it. But with an adult, they've chosen to be there. So they pull something out of you. And when you have such a great skilled teacher who can bring things in, I think I'm just suggesting, tell me if I'm right, I'm wrong, that your ability to have to create with your words brought people in to more, to understand, well, no, I should be more critical about my history. I should make more demands of what I'm learning, not investigate myself. And see what I can learn, even if the government don't learn anything, I should learn something about what has happened before. What do you think?
I know what you mean. Well, funny enough, you said something there about 2 or 3 minutes ago that history is facts and figures. Now, I would argue with that, right? Because I think that history is so much more, as you say, than facts and figures, right? Sure, anyone, a parish can learn all facts and figures, right? It's knowing what to do with the facts and figures. They mean something, and there's a story around facts and figures. And I suppose history, it's all about understanding the series of events, understanding the players, what their motives were. And really, you should be able to talk about an historical event, like, you know, maybe the formation of the Irish border, you know, between the 6 counties of Northern Ireland and the Irish Free State. You should be able to discuss that in a history class as animatedly as you would discuss Brexit today, you know, how Brexit impacts on our economy, North and South. You know, think of it as a moving feast. It's just a continuation. Like, history never stops. It's all a continuation. So it's not really, you know, I wouldn't get hung up on dates and bald facts. It's more the bigger picture. And as you said, it's more about learning to think, you know. It's learning to be observant, to understand, form opinions, and to analyse and to think. And really, creative writing doesn't really have a home when you're writing about history. But what does have, what is useful is a more analytical, journalistic writing. And journalistic writing, while it's quite different from creative writing, it's equally, you know, valuable, you know, because we all know a good journalist, you know, reading the articles, feature articles by a good journalist is atomic. Like, it's marvellous to tackle an article, you know, by Fintan O'Toole in the Irish Times, or, you know, read articles in the Guardian or the Washington Post or ever. Or, you know, I mean, a well-written article is a joy to read, but it's not... You can be creative with the way you express yourself, but you have to tell the truth. You know,
are you? No, I'm going to stop you there, because you're almost saying that because you're creative. Yeah, I do understand that. It's almost like, okay, when you're talking about creative writing, you're not actually telling the truth, but you're just maybe exaggerating some facts or maybe expanding it more so that people can get a vivid imagination. But I totally take your point. Now, we want to quickly get on to your first point. We're coming quickly to the end. You've given us a fabulous understanding of how your words and, you know, your journalistic abilities and your creativity has actually helped to move things along. And just can you give us your first piece that you wrote, that you had ready for us, please?
Okay, so now I believe you have a kind of a bit of a team or a theme this week, and it was rituals.
Yes.
So I have a few poems here that are refer to some rituals in life, and the first one is called Geisha, and that refers to the ritual of painting your house every few years, the inside of your house, every few years, and I would regard that as a ritual. Now, we don't paint the inside of ours often enough, so it's a really big ritual when we do. So will I read you that one?
Yes, please, read that. We would love to hear that.
Okay. So this one is called Geisha. Again, the colour wheel turns full circle, forcing a new subtlety to the shades of our humdrum domesticity. Answering the clarion, we pick our hues with the diligence of apprentices in a Florentine painter's workshop. It is a renaissance, after all, a rebirth of our household canvas. The true histories of wood and plaster marked by fresh paint, like a geisha masked in oshiroi. We imbibe the altered tones like Japanese tea tasters. Every splash of red wine and coffee assume a flawless sheen of uniformity and cleanliness. The sterile darkness erases all memory of scuff marks and fingerprints. An eco-shift attends the proceedings. Spiders expelled from corners, silver fish forced into new redoubts, murmurations of dust particles temporarily evicted, all will be covered in the heady emulsion, except for the narrow strip on the kitchen door recording the progress of your childhood growth. That makeshift inch ruler is sacrosanct. That's it.
That's wonderful. Anytime we have a painting, well, people do, don't they? They feel, you know, every so often I need to paint the outside, paint the inside, and do something, even though there's nothing wrong with it. So I love your play with words, and I just love that comparison.
And it is a ritual, isn't it? In a lot of houses, kids stand up against the kitchen door every so often, and you mark how tall they are.
If you have children, you have to paint nearly every week.
Yeah.
So, no, thank you very much. That was just an introduction to some of your work. Now, what I want to know is, I know you've got other projects. What are the projects you've got, your writing projects you've got coming on? If you could give us a quick rundown of some of them.
Okay.
Before we go to your
poem. Funny enough, so I give some courses in the Irish Writers' Centre in Parnell Square, all online, of course, at the moment. But funny enough, I just finished a course last week. It's a performance poetry course. My God, I forget the name of my own course now. Using coming of age as a prompt for performance memoir. And tonight, there's going to be a Taking the Mic. Are you familiar with Taking the Mic in the Irish Writers' Centre?
Yes, I used to attend there, actually. That used to be really
good. Oh, good for you. God, so the Taking the Mic is happening for the first time online tonight, actually. People might be able to hear the recording afterwards. So the course I gave is ending with this Taking the Mic. And our special guest is going to be Alan McMonagall. Are you familiar with Alan McMonagall?
No,
he's
I'm
an
not,
Irish novelist, and he's written two marvellous books that really you know, look at modern Ireland in a very kind of quirky and clever way. Ithaca and Laura Cassidy's Walk of Fame are his two novels. So he's a special guest tonight, and I'll be the MC. So let me think now. So I have another series of podcasts going up on the Near FM site called Old Silly Busters Rhyme or Reason. And that's looking at the crossover between literature and history. And I also am working on two radio projects, BAI funded. So I got funding from the BAI to do an 8-part series on the coming of age novel. But unfortunately, I'm putting a lot of it together, but hopefully we'll be able to get into studio soon. That's what the delay is, trying to get back into studio with actors and panels, you know, to record shows and that. So what else am I doing, Mary? I can't remember.
Well, you're very, very busy, but we want to get the next poem before our time is up. So can we get your next one really, really deep?
Okay.
The Abandoned Stiletto. Yeah,
Abandoned Stiletto on a local footpath.
Yes.
Okay, so this is obviously the ritual of young people, you know, heading out, having a social life, and the impact that social media has on their life. So, Abandoned Stiletto on a local footpath. I caught you, as morning walkers do, in the sluggish early after of the night before. Brash salute to decadent youth. You lay on your narrow side, as pathetic as a new dead, eyes wide fish, vivid among the customary cans and butts. Enigmatic salmon pink stiletto, untarnished and minus your other half, who fell into a taxi fixed to an inebriated foot. Friends likely waved your fleeting owner away with a cruel gaiety, swearing as she was swallowed by the fog of dawn. Only bought that morning, I'd say, cheap and cheerful, brassy, not classy, event appropriate, the kind of shoe that gives you license to madly sink or swim, not made for dancing, or even for walking, made for teetering on the brink in your very own movie, the one that'll go viral on social media before you wake from your stupor. The friends who caught your helpless flailing antics will broadcast to the hungry rabble who will eat you for breakfast. They'll still be your friends, though, next weekend. Anything for a laugh.
Oh my gosh, that is just so, it's just so perfect. I love it. I love the way you, I love everything about it, and I'm sure the listeners will too.
Very much.
No, because it just paints a picture of youth, and you just enjoy yourself. You're not understanding it all, but when you have someone that could see and picture it, I hope you'll go far.
Honestly,
it just captures such, it captures it. Thank you very much. Now,
but it's also a bit of a warning. It's also a bit of a warning,
yeah.
You know, the way social media can be abused.
Yeah, absolutely,
you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. It needs to go far. I really need to. Now, we come to the very, very end. I love talking to you. What I just want to get from you is that, do you have any ritual? Just in about 30 seconds, do you have any ritual that you perform? Are you involved in any rituals?
Well, I'll tell you what I like to do. Well, there's two things I love to do, and I suppose I would regard them as rituals. One is to walk the Dublin and Wicklow hills and mountains. And I'm never happier than when I'm wandering the hills of Dublin and Wicklow, out in the wilderness with my gear. And usually my other half will join me. Yeah, so that's nice to spend a good few hours doing that. To me, doing that, if you can at all at the weekend, would be great. Another ritual I enjoy is a gardener. Not so much a gardener. My back garden would be described as an allotment. more than a garden. So it's higgledy piggledy, full of raised beds and vegetable beds and a herb garden and a greenhouse. And I love it. And I love to walk around my garden and see what seeds are coming up, what plants are coming up. You know, it's all, I only grow stuff you can eat. I throw in a few flowers for colour. So that, you know, so that was, is something, for me, it's a ritual. I when I come in from the garden, I always say to whoever's here, I've just been out in the garden. I've been a woman out standing in my field.
Oh, that so is so good.
Take that 2 ways. Yeah, yeah.
Thank
so,
you.
So I don't know, they're kind of simple rituals, but they work for me.
Thank you so much for sharing them with us. We just want to know what writers do, what rituals they have, and thank you so much. We've come to an end of the program, and we're a little bit over time, but it's good because we've heard all we can from Bernie Dawn. Thank you, Bernie, for being on the program. We really admire you, and we couldn't get you in the Irish Writers' Centre to do another course with you. And surely, surely, we're going to hear more about you. I know there's a lot more for you, and anybody can hear your podcast on Near FM. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Appreciate you always. Have
Thank
a lovely
you.
Day. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
How's it going, brother?
All right, what's up?
Are these guys any good?
Dude, these guys are class.
I hear they play the best homegrown music live every Thursday night.
Yeah, on Near FM 90.3 from 8 till 9.
The Near FM Sessions.
Here at Near FM, we are participating in the community call to help combat the effects of COVID-19. The purpose of the community call is to coordinate community activity and community assistance to where it is needed. We ask our listeners to look out for each other. If your neighbours or relatives are required to stay at home, check with them to see if they need supports. And if you're in that category yourself, don't hesitate to ask for help. Whether it's with shopping, fuel delivery, collecting medicines, or any other necessities of daily life. The local authority helpline is there as a safety net to ensure that everyone is looked after. If you need assistance and you live in Dublin City, call 01222 8555. That's 01222 8555. If you need assistance and you live in Fingal, call 01-890-5000. That's 01-890-5000. Let's all stay safe together from all here at Near FM.
The Digital Experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM Digital Experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
Hi, hello, and welcome to a quick promo for my show, The Electric Wave, on Near FM on Thursday evenings. If you like your tunes electric and maybe a little eclectic, with a tinge of 80s electronics thrown in, then join me, 7 to 8pm, every Thursday on Near FM 90.3. I'll be playing everything from Kraftwerk to New Order, from the Human League to the Galaxy. By the way, I'm Rob Garvey. See you all 7pm, Thursdays, for The Electric Wave.
90.3. This is Near FM. And as usual, we have a wonderful treat for you today. I have a wonderful lady, Jo Heggett, and she is in London, but thank God for Zoom. We're through Zoom, and we're going to learn all about her writing skills and how she's come forth with her poetry and all that she does. Jo, how are you?
I'm really well, Mary. Thank you.
Thanks for your patience, and it's great to have you on the Zoom with us today in International Writers Network. Now, Jo, you said something in your bio that I just wanted to just get you to expand so we can understand more about your writing, you know, your writing background. You said you're a long life feminist. How did that How does that link with your writing? Can you tell us?
Well, I mean, I've always been a feminist. But lately, what that means to me has changed. So, I was very aware from when I was really young that the people that got really the attention, particularly in terms of their career, tended to be men and or women who followed that pathway. And as I've gotten older, I've realized quite recently that it's been particularly difficult for women because the idea of what success is has been shaped around men. And so we've had to try and fit into that. And that diminishes our ability actually to function. And so what I've been doing with this particular group of poems, which we can talk more about later, like I've had this year of poems as a poetry subscription, and the poems are written really to start to wake up parts, particularly of women that have been sleeping, by trying to fit into this particular way. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it really, I feel that now is a time where the feminine is needed and needs to wake up and actually needs to be redefined. So like growing up, the idea of what it meant to be feminine was always thought, I always felt like it was kind of considered a bit silly, and that's not really what it is. It's something very, very powerful and something that I've been really trying to reclaim with my poems.
Okay, do you know what? I think I get you, because is it like a new breed of women, or women just rethinking how they want to be as women? I want to see whether you could give me an example of how you feel you've redefined some part of it compared to what it started. So just give me like an example. Yeah.
For example, emotions. So when you are, like the way I was brought up is that in work, you shouldn't have emotions, that they're silly things, they're pesky things that get in the way, they just cause trouble, get rid of them. And even in a lot of spiritual practices, there's this idea that we should somehow, you know, get rid of them, let go of them. But actually, they're really, really important. And they, when we claim them and feel them fully in our bodies, when we experience them, they have incredible wisdom. And by really feeling them and recognizing their, I suppose their, it's hard to put into words, but their sacredness, we are so much more capable of living in the world. And this is for men too, not just for women, but traditionally this is something that, like I was on this course, there was 900 women on the course, and the leader said, who here has been told they're too crazy or too emotional? Every single woman put up their hand. And I thought, wow. So every woman in this room has been told that they're too emotional. What does that mean?
Now that's really interesting, because you also, I'm going to bring you back to this conversation. You also, you're involved with healing, meditation. design mm-hmm. and art. And those are really very emotional kind of things, aren't they?
They are. So I love my emotions.
Yeah. And I think it's something that also affects your mental health when you don't get involved with your emotion. But I want to link it to how that is it. Through poetry, you're expressing this and you're trying to get women to say, hey, look into this through your words. You're getting those emotions out. Am I right? Well, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, close. You're close, Mary. What I'm trying to do is, I really believe that our physicality is sacred and is divine. And that with the poetry, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to pull all those things together. I'm trying to anchor the emotions and the spiritual aspect into the body and into the physical sensations of the body, and then to do that through pleasure. So a lot of my poems will be very sensual as well as dealing with some topics that are quite difficult. So I'm trying to kind of alchemize those things together into an actual experience. So I know that sounds like a lot to do in a short poem, but that's kind of what I'm doing when I'm writing the poems.
Right. Now, so those topics are very, you know, as you say, it's to do with the senses and all those other things. Now, Jo, what I want to also know is, how did you then, because you studied applied art and that's your BA, and then you went on to do an MA in therapeutic body works?
Yeah, body work.
I'm just trying to merge the two, because sometimes we're trying to find out, okay, what's the background of all our writers? How do they come into writing, and how did that apply? So you've got the healing, the meditation, the design and art, and you studied this very technical. I mean, that's great to do, have an MA and all that. How did the words get into that? Did your study help you with your words to become a poet?
Very interesting question. I mean, I've always been really, really into words and reading and writing, but I did train for years and years and years as a visual artist, and I'm still a visual artist. I do fine art now. I do painting and installations and so on. I really started to understand my voice when I started exploring what the feminine is. That's when I really started to understand my voice. And although I'd written poetry on and off for years, and I'd had some periods of very intense poetry writing, was when I started to read them out loud that they really came to life. And that's when I understood what they were for, and that I needed to read them in my voice, that they're not, I don't write them to be on the page for someone to read in their head. I write them for me to read them out loud in my voice. So they're really for a kind of performance rather than to be read alone.
Now that's interesting, because you sent me some by, you know, through the email, which I would normally get. And then you sent me some that you actually read. And I have to say, I was just moved by your voice and the way you performed it, basically. So let's take the first one that you have planned for us today. And then we'll talk more about it. So what's your first one that you want to read? You've got three different ones.
Before I do that, I will just say, oh no, let me read it first and then I'll explain, because something about where you said, how do they tie in together? Because I've led a lot of meditation, I know how to use my voice in a particular way. Right. So I've learned over the years how to use my voice to affect people's systems, how they breathe, how they like, to kind of help people get into a meditative state. So that's one of the reasons why I really like to read my poems, because I know that then I can carry it in a certain way. So if that's okay, I'm going to read Horses first.
Yes,
is that okay?
Absolutely brilliant.
And I'm going to explain what this poem, this is actually based on my own childhood. It's a true story, me and my sisters. And it's written because very often I think young girls are made to feel that they're somehow silly and that the things they love are not really important. And I wanted to kind of dig into that and really frame more like the divine wildness of girlhood. So this is called Horses. The thing about horses is they remember when they had wings. When we were children, a fallen tree was cause for jubilation. That blocked pathway would soon set us free. Speed alone was not enough. We rode wild. No saddle, no bridle, bare legs on round backs. Felt their skin shiver. Their wings beat, our hearts beat, gathering pace, quicker, swifter. We both knew that flight was coming. And that moment, when we were free, free of the earth, free of thought, free of grief, that brief moment between leaping and landing, between then and now, that is the moment we lived for. Nowadays, we obsess about unicorns, their magic horns and rainbow eyelashes, but it's Pegasus who rules the horses, Pegasus who always has. And the thing about horses is they still remember when they had wings.
Wow. This is a wonderful stage show, which I'm privileged to hear, and so would the listeners be. Now, I wanted to, you said you and your sister, you had this experience that you captured in this poetry.
Yeah, sorry, continue.
Yeah, did you hear that? Did you capture this in this poetry? It's very exciting, but at the same time, you're bringing this mythology, the Pegasus.
Pegasus.
And I don't know, he had a tragic end, didn't he? Because he fell from the sky and onto earth and lost his wings. But why was that so important to bring in? Because that was very masculine.
Well, I think the thing about that poem is that, like, I consider that my sisters and I were quite feral. We grew up in the countryside here in Ireland, and kind of we did things that no way would people let their children do now. But for us, like, we were, when we rode the horses, it was like an escape, and it was like we were really free, and we were always looking for things to try and jump over. I mean, we did all kinds of stuff. Thankfully, my mum doesn't listen to the radio. We brought the horses in the house. We used to take them into the ocean swimming. We used to take them, like, all over. We used to do all kinds of crazy stuff. And there's something about girls and horses, like, at a certain age. I don't know if all girls, but a lot of girls are quite obsessed with horses. And there's something about the power of the horse and what the horse can do that is, I don't know, it just has a certain kind of resonance for girls. And so what I was doing here is I was trying to bring in that mythological, like, also, you know, if you go back to prehistoric cultures, horses were like horses, bulls. There's some of the in this part of the world, in Europe, there's some of the kind of what you'd call totem animals. They're tribal animals, so they're quite symbolic of certain kinds of power. And then I wanted to bring in the unicorn, because nowadays unicorns are something that girls are quite obsessed by. And so I kind of wanted to bring that in, that nowadays young girls are obsessed by unicorns, but that girls' power is much more than something cute. It's something wild. And that's what I was trying to get at with this poem, is that the power of a young girl isn't just cute. It's wild and it's free, and it should be wild and free.
Right. Thank you. That's well understood and taken in.
Thank you.
So we need to talk about My Little Pony.
I don't mind My Little Pony. It's cute. And that's beautiful. I love that side of girls, but that's not the only side.
Yeah,
of girls.
I think that's it. This is what it is. There's so much more. And that's what you're saying, that your poem is bringing us to. And thank you very much for enlightening us, because that's what we do. We get more wisdom as we talk to poets. So now, do you write alone, or are you involved with a kind of a writer's group, or do you have partners that you bounce your poems from? How do you move with your poem, or is it just you? It's okay whichever way. We just want to know so that we understand where you're coming from.
Well, I had this thing about once I realized about this that that I liked and needed to read my poems, I started trying to find as many opportunities like as I could. And I was doing things like, you know, when it was someone's birthday, I'd read them a poem and so on. And I thought, you know, I want to do this. I want to make this my practice. So I set up this subscription where people would subscribe and I would write a poem and read it every week. And then I thought, okay, I'm liking this. Let me commit to doing it for a year. And I'm actually, next week is my year of doing writing, editing, and recording a poem every week. And so that's been my container to really develop my practice and my voice, knowing that I need to produce this poem to read it on a Saturday. So I write it first, I either dictate into my phone, or I write it by hand, or I start on my computer. And then once I know that it's, like I have to find something that I really want to alchemize. And when I find that thing that really catches an idea that I really want to kind of dig into and alchemize, I start to write it and read it and write it and read it and write it and read it. So I'm editing it as I'm speaking it to get it correct for my voice. And so what I normally do is I'll start the poem in the week, and then I'll spend probably Thursday and Friday or Wednesday and Thursday editing, and then I'll leave a little bit. I won't quite finish the editing until right before I read it, because I want it to feel alive and fresh when I'm reading it for people. I don't want it to be like already finished. So that's been my process over the last year. And to celebrate the end of my subscription, I've asked all the people who are there to give me a desire that they would like alchemize. And I'm attempting to do a cluster of bespoke poems, one for each person. Right. So we've just started that cycle now.
So I'll ask you, would it be a cheeky question to say that, are they all women that has the same mind thought that subscribe to this? Or would you find men, because men can have that idea, I want to understand more about feminism. Are they
absolutely
all women?
I'm totally happy. I mean, I'd be very happy. I haven't got any men on there, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't. And I do read to men. It's not like I only write for women. I only read to women. And not all my poems are, you know, like they're all about different things, but I am trying to center what I consider the female experience, just because I think it hasn't had enough space in the world generally, particularly in the arts. But absolutely, yeah, it's not. And like when I talk about the feminine, I'm not really just talking about women. It's in all of us, right? And it's not really been valued in anybody. So it's been as damaging for men, I think, the way the feminine has been treated. I'm very happy to read for men.
Men are welcome to subscribe as well.
Always.
Right. You give us the details towards the end so we'll be able to encourage men and women to subscribe to this wonderful, as I said, I love listening to your voice. So on that note, would we go on to your second poem before we ask for the question for this month?
Yes, please. So I think the next one I'm going to read is called Juno Minetta. And this poem, it's about money. And Juno Minetta is a Roman goddess, and they minted coins in her temple. And I tried to feel into what it would be like if the kind of energy of money was feminine, so was owned by the goddess, and it weaves in with the idea of witches and spells, and there's a phrase I use, which is the power of logos, and that means the ability to bring things to life by speaking them in words, which as a poet is particularly resonant. So I'll read this one now, Juno Minetta. Coins tumble from my lips as pleasure speaks. A golden dragon uncurls in my belly. I feel her fire. Draw me down, she says, give me voice. I weave worlds with my words. Ice crystals hang in the air, diamond dust, the power of logos. I speak my dreams of God filled with her snakes. I enchant, I incant, I spell. I've been burned for less. Coins tumble from my lips, pearls spill from my throat. Where is the harm? I have no weapon, no war, no fight. Coins tumble from my lips. Rubies, sapphires called by my tongue. My song brings life, recreates all things. Coins tumble from my lips. Pray that I speak your name.
You are absolutely brilliant, Joe. I mean, I think I need to subscribe. I don't know about anybody else. I think it's the way it, but with this one, although you said, okay, our words generally creates, isn't it? When we're negative, then the environment becomes very negative around us. So I love the way you've taken it and you've made us think. I mean, one of the things you said that really got me is like, supposing women were the one in control, actually, of money, the capital, you know, how different it would be. I think you capture that in this image, the image of a woman that's producing and, you know, and I think the world would run differently if it was the case, but I beg to disagree.
It's just an interesting thing to think about. It wouldn't necessarily be better, but if women had designed the world, for example, what a different, it would be a different world. I don't, you know, it's very interesting for me to explore this because I think the world really is changing and women are, you know, coming to the forefront and we don't just necessarily want to do things in the same way they've been done before, you know. So it's very interesting to start to, like, I have this thing that whoever the artists that are heard or seen are the people that recreate the world. And so to start to explore how it might be different, I find very interesting.
Definitely a challenge there for women to rise up and keep on creating. That today is a lovely thought. Today we are talking about rituals. Now, there's not an answer for yes or no, no right, no wrong. We just want to know what your opinion is as a writer and as a woman. Do you have any ritual? What does it mean when somebody says ritual? What does that word mean to you? Does it touch any?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. I have many, and it's something I think about a lot because I'm both quite academic and logical, but also very, I believe in, I suppose I believe in magic, which sounds a bit weird. I believe equally in science and magic. And so in that, I believe both are real and not real at the same time. So, and that's my prerogative, I guess, as an artist or a writer, is to like dip into all the different worlds. I like to use ritual a lot. I consider myself an earth worshiper, like that. If you asked me if I had a religion as such, that's what it would be. And so I do spend quite a lot of time communicating with the earth and trees and the animals and just the whole kind of life force, I guess. And I have quite a lot of rituals for that, yes. But they change. I like to work intuitively and instinctively.
And so would those rituals also form part of your poetry? Would they influence your poetry, do you think? How you think about things, how you relate to things, would those rituals have an influence?
Even though the poems that I've read today aren't specifically about specific rituals, I think my work does explore that. I quite often reference magic and ritual. So for example, the one about the horses, that as children, this was part of our ritual. You know, we would want to do this as much as we could, ride the horses and try and get that feeling, you know, of leaping. And I think ritual, for me, ritual links with, it's a way of connecting the spiritual and the physical. So like when you use, for example, like I'm a big collector of things that I find, you know, stones and bits of moss and lichen and so on. And when I use those in a ritual, it's a way of drawing, of like focusing an intent or a spiritual intent into the actual physical world.
And way that rich, because people think about rituals, like, oh, this is really binding, you know, to have to do this every day. Do you find liberation from your kind of ritual that you're talking about to us today?
Yeah, because nothing is fixed. Everything is mutable. And so I personally don't like to be too contained, but I like enough containment to help me keep moving. So like with the poetry subscription, I decided to do it, right? I'm going to do it for a year. I'm going to do it every week for a year. And that's great. But if I thought I had to do it for the rest of my life, that's not so great.
Right. Then so I understand.
You know, it's the right sized container is what's for me is what's important. And it's the same with the rituals. When I feel I need to do one, I do one. If I need to do that with my sisters, I do it with my sisters. If I need to do, you know what I mean? I don't, that's kind of, that's up for me. Like, I know my life. I know how I know my spiritual interaction. And so I don't, it's up to me.
Just on the last phone, we're coming to the very end of this talk. We've had such a wonderful time chatting with you. And if you could just tell us the last, it says I'm running out of time. Right. If you could just tell us the last poem, please.
I will. This is a very short poem. This is one of the first poems I wrote when I really started getting back into poems and reading them aloud. So this is definitely, this is one of the ones that were instrumental in it. And this was when I was going through quite a big change. And I realized this was the direction I wanted to go in. And I wrote this. It was New Year. And I was thinking about the idea of New Year's resolution. And so it's called This Year. This year, I choose to live in courage, not resolve. This year, I choose to soar amongst the stars, to glide beneath the waves. Plankton stars may sparkle in my hair. This year, I choose to let go. The wind can disperse my bonds. I expand. Each molecule vibrates in space. This year, I choose not to hold it together, to spin, untie, unstrung, undone. This is my New Year's dissolution.
You are brilliant. I love it. I almost want to come into that dissolution with you for next year.
Thank you. I read a version of that for people for their birthday as well, where I speak their name and I make it about their birthday. Because for me, you know, the individual person's year starts, you know, on their birthday, right? You start a new year. So
brilliant. We've come to the end, the very end. Is there, just really, really quickly, is there anywhere where we could get you? Do you have a website? Yeah, do you have an Instagram?
Absolutely. I do. My website is johecket.com. That's johecket.com. And you'll see there's a poetry page there. And then I have two Instagram, but my poetry one is Joe Heckett Words.
Right. And we can subscribe to you through those channels.
Through my, you can subscribe to the poetry subscription through my website. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right. And even though I've completed the year, there's a year's worth of poems, so people can still sign up and get the poems.
Wonderful. It's been a real privilege to have you here. You've taught us and expanded us, and your performance is just, it needs to be, you know, you're walking, talking liberation. I think that's what you are. Thank you so much with your word, with your poetry. Thanks for the time, and thanks for everything you've given us this afternoon. Have a good day.
Thanks, Mary. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much.